webcasting to the world, live, the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. It's live, ladies and gentlemen. Greetings, beautiful humans. This is Greg Amberge in beautiful Kings Mills, Ohio. You're listening to the Glenn Klein Online broadcast coming to you from the studio in Tampa, Florida. It's hump day, June 10th, 2009. The only June 10th, 2009 in the history of humanity. It's our pleasure to welcome in from Houston, Texas, the Grace Czar, Michael Williams. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. How does it feel channeling Glenn Klein?
It's uncomfortable. There's only one Glenn Klein.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I figured tonight we would make you the Grace Czar because the president has appointed, I think the most unbelievable thing I've ever heard, a pay czar, to make sure that people on Wall Street aren't making too much money. So you can be tonight the Grace Czar. You are in charge of grace and dishing it out. How's that?
Well, I don't think that position is open.
Last week we had a really good hour remembering Cliff Hazelbaker.
Yes,
and,
it is.
That was truly a nice hour of that. But what's been going on since then with you?
Well, it's been life here in Houston, and in fact, I had an experience over the weekend that was a very first for me, and I was telling Glenn about it earlier today. I think it's a time that I could say, use the word surreal without it being tossed around in everything that everybody says and really mean that it was a surreal experience. I performed my first gay wedding.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And it was, of course, it was not here in Texas. I wouldn't be alive right now.
Surprise, huh?
But this was in Minnesota, and two of my friends in Minnesota got married, Michael Blanche and David Wade. I've known Michael for about 20 years, I suppose, and then I've known he and David for 15 years, and they have been together for 15 years. And
do they live in Indiana?
Excuse me?
Do they live in Indiana?
No, they live in Minnesota.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if that was there was a David I met at Indiana that I thought that might. Never mind. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead with the story.
No, the gay guy, I guess. But they of course invited me up to do the wedding. I haven't done weddings since I was pastor, you know, so it's been decades since I've done a wedding, and I hated doing them then, and I still am not very partial to them, although this was very different. And after I first got there, one of the first things that Michael and David showed me was their wedding, their marriage license from Iowa. You know, Iowa has made marriage between same-sex legal in that state, and they live in Minnesota, so they had already tied the knot as far as legally in Iowa just a week or so ago. And then I was to do the ceremony there where all of their family is in Minnesota. And Michael's mother gave him away, and David's mother gave him away. Michael's father has passed away, and David's stepfather was there on the front row, too. And Michael's two brothers were there, and his nephews, 18 and 16, were ushers at the wedding, and David's sister was his best woman, I guess, and she was, was there with him during the wedding, and Michael's brother was his best man. And then it was like I was looking into almost another world, that, because the world that I come from, with the shame and the guilt and suicide attempts and all of this stuff in my past revolving around this subject, and here I am, and they've got 100 guests, 100 selected guests, their closest friends, and the best I could tell, me and them, and I think they said they had one nephew that was 13 years old that just came out to his parents the day before the wedding. We were the only gay people there. And I just always wondered what a gay wedding would be like. And there was nothing gay going on, except for the fact that these were two of my very dear friends standing in front of me. You know, the crowd was just, their work friends and their daily life friends and their families, and it was very touching, and they really enjoyed the things that I had to say, as the minister in the wedding. And but it was like looking to the future. I don't know, it was just like two worlds, and I thought, why is this so threatening to anyone? I don't get it. It was, except for the fact that it was Michael and David instead of David and Michelle.
Right.
There just wasn't anything different about it at all. It was, and they had to wait a couple of days before they went on their honeymoon, and after this past Saturday when we did the wedding, and I left there Sunday morning, and Michael drove me to the airport and dropped me off, and it was like I know I'm going on and on about this, but it really was so very different. I mean, it was obviously I believe that it's inevitable that this is the way that things will go nationwide, regardless of what anybody's views are about it. It's already tipped the scales, and
yeah, I agree. And I think, Mike, as we as society becomes more comfortable talking about this, there are more and more of us that have very close friends and family that we discover are gay. And it changes the whole dynamic when it's your friend, or it's your friend's son, or your friend's daughter, or
yeah,
somebody that you've loved since they were a little kid, and they're struggling with who they are, and they come out or whatever, and I'm just glad that society's evolving to the point where this isn't the way it used to be. My wife just gave me an article. There was a Newsweek about 2 or 3 months ago where they explored this issue. And I wasn't expecting the articles in the Newsweek magazine to be so well written and so well researched, but the women that wrote the articles had done a lot of research on just the biblical aspect of marriage. And one of the conclusions they came to is that the Judeo-Christian ideal of marriage that's talked about so much by the moral majority types, and that it doesn't exist in the Bible.
No.
We see in the Old Testament that it was polygamy was very common. It was actually the norm in the Old Testament times, and there was, you know, that was seen as a blessing to have multiple wives. And Paul, in his writings, he says some absolutely ridiculous things, like you should go ahead and get married rather than sexually.
Yeah.
That's a bad reason to get married.
Well, can you imagine giving that advice to your 17-year-old son?
No, I could not.
So your 17-year-old daughter is like...
Yeah, and Paul actually says it's better for a man not to marry. Well,
yeah.
You know, my parents have a pastor who's in his early 40s, and he's not married. And it was looked upon in his denomination like there was something wrong with him because he wasn't married.
Yeah.
And in fact, when you've got clear what they consider to be scripture saying that it's better for a man not to marry.
Yeah.
But you can't find this perfect ideal of what the religious right pawns off on us as the ideal Christian marriage. You don't see that in the Bible.
No, you definitely don't. And let me say right up front, I am the biggest proponent of a good, stable relationship, a man and woman, two men, two women, whatever it is, that's powerful. I don't know if you ever heard my series on marriage and divorce.
I did. It's revolutionary. It's they've got it at Gospel Logic, gospellogic.com.
And
I believe
that
I
have most of it on there.
I think that's where I saw it.
It's
very good.
It is revolutionary because we took the matter for face value without having a side to pick about it. And basically what we've found out is exactly what you said. Not only is there no such thing as a scriptural marriage, there is no such thing as a scriptural divorce going on.
Right.
On either end of the field. If they want to stay with scriptural marriage, then you need to stick with scriptural divorce. And let me tell you what scriptural divorce is. Only the man can divorce his wife. There is not a line, a breath, a word about a woman having a right to divorce her husband.
Right.
And only the man can divorce the wife. And, of course, Paul's teaching about all of marriage, was all of it, is just in its biggest picture revelation. Of course, all the scriptures are about Jesus. And Paul said that marriage was all about Jesus. And of course, the picture we get about divorce is if only the husband can divorce, and if Jesus is the husband, and we are his bride, then the only one that can break this union between Christ and his church is Christ. And we have his promise. And he said, I will, as a good husband, he said, I will never leave you or forsake you. So we wind up. And that's the thing, is that we get down to bickering about these, just about like this. I mean, like I've done about, mixed races and things that was forbidden, totally forbidden by law and the church for so many years. And gosh, that if that was ever passed, there would be the total decline of civilized society. And marriage would be undermined if mixed races could marry legally. And, we made it through that hurdle, and it certainly didn't destroy marriage. But instead, and the thing, too, it really, really touched my heart, because at 13, if I would have come out to my parents and my family, I think that would have probably been my first attempt at suicide. My first suicide attempt was at the age of 15, when trying to deal with this issue. And This whole thing, I cannot tell you about this weekend and what it did for in my life. Just to observe, I almost feel like I watched a movie instead of not only attended but officiated in this wedding. And so here's a 13-year-old boy that instead of coming out to his parents and killing himself the next day, which right. The statistics show that that was a very common thing to happen to young men his age, if they did come out at all. And then the rejection that they would get from the parents and church and friends and society and family. And here's a young man, and the change and the peace about all of this, past all the rhetoric and the uproar, and here I was, I didn't know until after the wedding that there was a 13-year-old boy there who had just come out to his parents, and then his parents brought him to his own uncle's gay wedding the next day. And I'm telling you, I don't care what anybody says, you can't tell me that's not a good thing. You know, we can take all the moral positions that we want, but this has nothing to do with anybody's anything, or this is an issue between Michael and David, and believe me, it was a beautiful ceremony, and we acknowledged the gospel and the ceremony and the oneness of the human race, and it was just it really was amazing. But that's why I say to people, and I made this comment when I was in Canada, and I had somebody to come up to me afterwards and disagree with me, and I had made the comment, we're getting better at this. The planet is a better place to live now than it was, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, and so on, and that we've gotten better at this all along, even though we've had our major upheavals that have, you know, but they helped move us along toward a more civil outlook on things, and we're going to go through another upheaval of extremists here in this country. As demonstrated by today and over the past week, you know, these fringe groups that are just up in arms. They
shooting at the Holocaust Museum today.
Yes, the attack on the Holocaust.
What a terrible place to have more violence.
Yeah, you know, and as everybody knows, Glenn Klein, our superior host, not superior in quality, just superior. He's a Jewish man, and he and his family. In fact, I'm doing family research for him now, and it's really great looking through all of these Jewish family names and them, you know, the census reports saying that they are Yiddish, Russian, you know, and saying, you know, where they're from and their identity. And you talk about a difficult research, though. Everybody's named Joseph and Abraham. you know, when that happened, you know, I thought about Glenn, and I've had recent discussions about with another friend, you know, about white pride, you know, and it's like I couldn't get it. It's like you know, and I think anybody should have pride in who they are, but when your pride comes to at the cost of lowering somebody else in your eyes, that's racism.
Yeah.
And I don't care which direction it is. And
your pride
and excuse me?
In your accomplishments and your own self-worth and those sort of things, not in the DNA that was handed to you by accident.
Yes, yeah, and you can be proud of, you know, of being white, but it's not at the discredit of someone being black. When people are celebrating Black Pride Week, it is not at the expense of putting down white people. It's the fact that they have been, you know, an oppressed people, and time to be able to rejoice in their identity. But a lot of people just, you know, they don't get that there is a difference in this.
Yeah.
And and I realize it is a very sensitive issue. But
I'm going to jump in right here and bring. We've got a caller calling in.
Oh, wonderful!
From beautiful Daytona Beach, Florida, where my son almost went to college. He almost went to Embry-Riddle. We've got Mike Kolb calling in from Daytona. Mike, how are you doing?
Great. How are you?
We're doing good.
That's ironic because I am a student at Embry-Riddle. So.
Oh, you are. Okay, that's right. It was on my son's short list.
Where'd he end up going?
He's going to go to Ohio University and study engineering.
But, a little bit more reasonably priced.
Yeah. But you're a pilot, aren't you?
No, actually, I'm an MBA student. So.
Oh, okay, at Embry-Riddle, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. My wife's a pilot, and she's actually down in Mike's neck of the woods today. She's at the Johnson Space Center. They're not ready to go on the vomit. They're going to vomit comet.
Oh, my goodness.
Is she in the military? Is she in the military?
No, she's a student as well.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and is she going to be an astronaut? Or?
Oh, she'd love it, but probably not. She'd probably too old for that right now.
Yeah.
Good night.
We'll
let
that
record.
When I was
at that
recorder, Mike, tell us your story a little bit.
I just want to call and say hi and tell you I'm here. I've been contributing to the ministry what little I can. And
thanks, Mike.
I heard about you through a friend of mine, Dean Stecker. Dean is in the Word of Faith movement in Colorado, in Chicago, up in the Aspen area. And he turned me on to your tapes, and I've been listening ever since.
And what was his name again?
Dean Stecker.
Well, the name's not familiar.
He was a pastor at a small church up in Aspen, Colorado, up in that area.
Oh, okay.
That's a beautiful place to be a pastor.
Yeah, it's beautiful up there. And I've just been really loving the message. I listen. The nature of my job is such that I'm pretty much in front of a computer listening to tapes. And so I hear you guys all the time. So I feel like I know it. But I just love your message and just wanted to call and kind of wave at you long distance here.
And this is your first time calling me, isn't it, Mike? Oh, awesome. Well, don't make this a one-time thing. Now, you've gotten intrigued about the pastor who gave you the tapes. Tell us his story. If he was pastoring a church, I mean, did him getting the tapes, was that a part of his process? I mean, is he still pastoring, or?
Oh, no. he's in the Word of Faith, and I think he followed your ministry while he was in the Word of Faith. And then he also kind of followed you out of the Word of Faith. And he had a small church, and then all the legalism and all of this. The Word of Faith was just a sound like magic to me. And the magic didn't work, of course. And pretty much his life blew up, and he ended up getting divorced. And now he's remarried and living a very peaceful life with the gospel, not religion.
Awesome.
And, I'm trying to think. I don't know how else you might know him, but I think we just might know him tangentially, you know, just happened. But he did say he contributed a while back,
Well, so it's another one of those stories of Mike Williams and his tapes getting into a church, and next thing you know, church is over, right?
Yeah. In fact, he was listening to, I forget which tape, but he was going back and forth over the Rockies, and he was leading up, and he was like, oh, my God, he's not going to say it, and then he said it, that everybody's saved, and it's a good first spin, like it took me first spin. But this is great. There's no more S&M, and there's no more legalism. And I was listening to you guys talking about the whole gay marriage and all that. I just think of how
do you think about that?
I think they should obviously have the right, and have the right to be as happy and miserable as the rest of us.
Yeah. Why do I want to keep the gay community from experiencing the misery?
I know.
And the joy.
Well, I find it really ironic, Mike, that one of the things you'll hear fundamentalist ministers say about gay men is the problem with promiscuity.
Uh-huh.
And then they want to turn around and prevent them from being in a committed relationship at the same time.
Who was talking about them? Gay men's promiscuity, is that Jimmy Swagger?
In general, usually when you... Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. I you talk about promiscuity, and I do agree. I mean, as a gay man, I do know that there is a higher degree of promiscuity, but until you can compare people in a society on an equal plane, you really can't criticize one group over the other. I mean, if there is a group that has, on a level, if there's discrimination and there's one group that has access to, more financial or a scholastic achievement, and then you blame them for having low-paying jobs, for so many years, minorities did not have equal access to education. And so it's been, it would be the same thing. I'm wondering what all of this will do in the gay community, but then, and of course, you go all the way back, just a few years ago, I mean, in our society, for two gay people to meet, there was this entire subculture, public areas, because there wasn't any place, around small towns so that people could meet. So there, there's just a subculture that took place. And I can tell you, I remember back in the, was it still in the 70s, I suppose? Jeez, I suppose it was still the late 70s. In fact, it was. I remember driving downtown. We were there at a church ministering. And of course, I had heard about the park there. I don't think it's called Peachtree Park, but it's the big park downtown.
In Atlanta? In Atlanta?
Yes, downtown Atlanta.
Okay.
Anyway, I was so tempted I had to drive through it, and it was hundreds of people standing, gay men standing along the curbs and everything, and waiting for somebody to pick somebody up and all of this. And that was true in virtually every state in the union, that there were these places and parks and gathering places. But now that there are clubs and social places and whatever the avenue of meeting is, you don't see that anymore. You don't see all of the promiscuity in public like it was, because now there's an environment where the gay people can go and, you know, be a part of an accepted social structure instead of, you know, having to resort to the curb of a street to meet someone. And not that there's not going to be those that are going to do that anyway, gay or straight. But that's what I'm saying, is that you had an entire gay community that had to resort to unconventional means, shall I put it. And now it's just like with that wedding, you know, and this was so, you know, I expected something gay to happen, you know, I don't even know what I expected. It was just so normal. And I just couldn't get over, you know, what could this possibly threaten somebody else? But the, you know, once we get where the society is on equal footing, you know, then we'll compare, you know, the standards of people's lifestyles. And it's just not fair to compare until, like you say, until we're afforded the same rights and privileges and accesses.
I'm not even sure what the point is of them saying that they're more promiscuous. I don't know. The whole thing is just so silly. The law just makes people stupid.
The law makes people stupid. May I quote you on that, Michael?
You can. There is this pastor in Denver where I'm from, Tom Stipe. You probably know the name. He's big in the church movement. He's got a big mega church there. He said, sin makes you stupid. I think the law makes you stupid, because then you end up like all these right-wingers who just, I just bristle when I hear them talk. And the fact that I was part of it also makes me cringe a bit.
That's me. I was very much, 10 or 15 years ago, I was active in the Republican Party, and I had already started to soften a little bit on the gay issue, but I don't think until I really became friends with Mike is when it really kind of crystallized for me. But now I'm still very conservative on financial issues and things like that, but on most other issues I've become very libertarian, and I don't really find a party that I fit in anymore. I think Glenn's had the same experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of people are having that problem in our environment today. It's, and of course with the gospel, we appeal to right-wingers, left-wingers, mid-wingers. It doesn't make any difference. Everybody needs the gospel, and we don't settle on a political view in our presentation, in my presentation of the gospel, but it does affect some of those views a lot of times when you embrace the gospel, and if it doesn't, then it will definitely affect the social part of your political views for sure.
Right.
You just cannot remain as narrow-minded about social issues when the gospel is in the air. You just cannot. And it's so amazing. Of course, I get these letters, you know, from people all the time, you know, the people that knew me back in the Word of Faith days, and their whole issue is not trying to persuade me against what I believe. They are just outraged that I am openly gay. I know that's wrong, and how dare you, and it's also threatening. It's a little scary in the light of the environment that we're now in. I mean, we're going to see, and I know that they've published a report that, that this was what they were seeing was an increase in extremists, in this country that was going to be coming in, and it looks as though the report was certainly right on for sure. Whether anybody agreed with it or not, it certainly has come to forefront.
Well,
and certainly not inspired by the report.
Hey, Mike, the Republicans actually made the panel apologize for that report, which ended up now being totally accurate.
Yeah, it sure seems to have been, that's for sure. But it is, you know, and when I, you don't realize how closely linked you are, and, you know, it might put a little bit more empathy in somebody if you happen to be a part of a minority group or a group that is discriminated against, such as the gay community. And when you see the hatred that can lead, the type of hatred that can lead to violence, and it's like, you know, well, I hope this cools down, because it's not a pleasant thing to watch this happen in our society. You know, we freedom of expression of our opinions is such a vitally important part of our lives. But then to take it to a point of violence, that's crime, you know, and they don't need to separate it into some other kind of crime. It's just crime. And if this guy was upset because of this or upset because of that, it's just crime. And it's the only way we can deal with it is just as what it is. But it is kind of a scary thing. And I think about, you know, a lot of my friends. I've got so many friends from so many minority groups, and my heart goes out to them when I see things like this begin to happen. It's one thing to have threat from outside our country, but then to begin to feel that threat intensify. It's not that we haven't had this always, but it's definitely things are getting more tense. And all the more reason for the gospel, which I have watched people's social views, whether their political views change or not, definitely seen their social views about these things change. And I've made open comments too, you know, and I openly rebuked Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell for being the voices that incited people like the ones who killed the young man,
Matthew Shepard.
Killed Matthew Shepard, and of course they suddenly distanced themselves. But you can't make those statements against a certain group of people, especially from a ministry and a spiritual standpoint, and place them in a category that God hates, that the devil is, they're full of the devil, and they're evil, and then for the people who have that fringe mindset, they're just endorsed. And I did hold Pat Robertson responsible for Matthew Shepard's death, and I still do. I hope he can acknowledge that someday. But thank God in the gospel, though, we have the opportunity, guys, every one of us, to quell that type of atmosphere that is now happening in our nation. And
the beautiful thing the gospel allows you to do is to disagree with somebody on a political issue and still see them as righteous in God's sight and see them as your brother, and as some, it allows you to have good political debate and things like that. If it's just politics, I'm sure Mike, you and I could probably find 100 things to disagree on. But the gospel unites us in that God sees us the same way through Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And it makes politics a lot more civil.
And that's the thing, is it has to become more civil. And Michael, I know that you would agree with that. It's there's times I just refuse to talk politics with people, and it's not because I don't want to hear someone else's views. It's the tenor of what's happening. It's the name calling and the bashing that's going on. And if we have to do that to be able to present a view, I don't want to hear your view. And because I'm not going to be doing that myself. And I just don't want to get into discussions where the people have to denigrate somebody. I don't care whether it's George Bush or Barack Obama. I mean, these are human beings, that are created in the image of God, and I can disagree with any one of them or both of them as vehemently as I like, and it does not require that I take away their value as human beings and resort to suspecting them of everything under the sun. It's really funny when people are insecure about their position, they have to make everything about the person wrong. Believe me, I've been in this position. When the religious folks came after me, and when they disagreed with me about the issue of grace, that's when they had to assassinate my character. They had to put me in a category. They had to label me as bad of the devil and everything else because they could not help to refute what I was saying about the gospel. So instead of engaging me in any debate, which all of my meetings were always open to people, and believe me, we had them, gosh, and we saw the anger, but people who simply wanted to stand up and express their point of view, they were given all the time they wanted. And then you're great. I'm glad you expressed your view. Now here's my response to that, because I was the one who was asked to come and speak. But even people that were not invited to speak were always opened the floor for them to voice their opinion. But that's always a healthy thing to do. I don't care whether it's the gospel or what it is. But when you begin to classify a group of people as wrong or bad, and that they all, let me tell you gentlemen, terms that turn me off immediately, and I will close my ears automatically to the opinion, is the term all and always.
Yeah.
Those two terms, I automatically know that you are racist and bigoted and opinionated in your view. And there is going to be no discussion, because you can say that I experienced this with this certain person, and it may have something to do with their race or their sexuality or not. But when you say all of them do this, they always that, and they all do this,
right,
that's the end of discussion for me. I don't want to talk with that type of narrow-mindedness. I have no time for it.
You know what I found? You're listening to the Glenn Klein Online broadcast here on Wednesday night. Mike, we're going to let you go and free up the phone line for somebody else if they want to call in. Thanks for calling in tonight. The number is 800.
Mike?
Yes.
Okay. Can I say one thing just real quick?
Sure.
Facebook, I know you're a fan. In fact,
we're Facebook friends, yeah.
Yeah, I've got the Simpsons character as my icon, my picture. I created a little page if people want to visit. I don't know if it'll turn into anything. It's the Friends of the Gospel Revolution at Mike Williams, something like that.
Right.
It's not an official Gospel Revolution site, but it's just if some of us want to get together and
read
more.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll mention that.
So that, if you're on Facebook and you want to look me up, my name's Greg Ambergy, and I'll find a link to that and post it on my wall. But thanks for calling in, Mike. If you want to call us and join us tonight,
thanks,
the number is 800-436-3260. Again, that's 800-436-3260. That's interesting what you say about using the word all. What was that?
The term all and always. The only place
because
the gospel.
In the gospel, if you want to find the gospel in the Bible, then research the word all and always, where it talks about the genuine all, which is
all
of us being redeemed.
That is the all that makes us one. The other term all is used to divide and separate.
Exactly.
And the gospel all includes the entire human race. When you begin to use the term all pertaining to a certain group of people, you know, your heart's just messed up. I don't know how to say it any other way. That's a messed up heart. You've got an opinion about a group of people that is, that has been influenced, and we could go through and try to figure out why, but, in this Gospel Revolution broadcast, I think that this is a really good thing for us to emphasize here, just as we're in our last 10 minutes of the broadcast. And I'd really like to challenge the folks, because I know we all want to grow, and we want our hearts to increase and grow in grace. But I really do suggest that you and I both, that we all check that terminology as we are speaking about any group or even a family. You know, we can even do it with a family.
Yeah, Mike, we've got a very special guest joining us right now. I'm not sure exactly where this unknown caller is calling from, but caller, are you there?
Good evening, you beautiful humans.
I can just barely hear him, but
how you guys doing?
We're doing
good. From a very undisclosed location, I guess.
Indeed. I just wanted to throw in, you guys may have talked about it already, but the tragedy that happened at the Holocaust Museum in Washington today.
Yes,
we
would like to hear
point out, you know, and of course there's groups like that are represented by about this guy that did the shooting all over the world that deny the Holocaust. But the thing that is even a bigger issue is that they're saying that one race of people are superior to another.
Yes.
And if there's anything the gospel does, is it levels the playing field for everybody.
That's exactly what we've been talking about, Graham. It's like you're here when you're not here. it's exactly true, Glenn, and we're just discussing the term all, you know, whenever we use that pertaining to any group of people, that, you know, a person has a problem in their heart when they say that this group of people, they all do this or they're all like that, or but when the term is used, the only place that we can use that term to say that it's legitimate is the gospel. And in Christ, we are all created equal. And that all and the description of everyone, that everyone is righteous, all are holy, all are perfect in God's sight. The man who did the shooting today was perfect in God's sight. The man who got shot today was perfect in God's sight. People on both sides of this issue are perfect in God's sight. And it is the only hope for ever addressing these types of issues, Glenn. Would you agree with that?
I would, and I just thought it was so ironic that the man that was shot and killed was an African-American guarding a Jewish museum in the nation's capital, shot by a World War II veteran who had lost his way. And it really encompasses much of our society, that one little tragedy, one big tragedy, really. But I just wanted to throw that out and thank Greg for sitting in, and I'll step aside so if somebody else wants to call, that they'll be able to.
Thanks, Glenn. I love hearing your voice.
All right, you guys. Thank you very much for carrying on.
Thanks, Glenn. If you'd like to join us in the last, say, 7 minutes, the number is 800-436-3260. My son went to the Holocaust Museum during the inauguration of Barack Obama. He went with a class from his school. And it was such a powerful experience for him. He said, "Whenever anybody walked out, it was just silence.
Yeah,
that humans could be so inhumane, and I guess is the word, to other humans. It just lets you know what we're capable of if we don't just understand that all of us are valued in God's sight, and all of us are brothers.
It's like Glenn said, the great danger of seeing one group of people or any group of society as less than any other group. It is the open door for violence. It is definitely the open door. And then the rhetoric starts, and it intensifies, and then the divide gets bigger, and the justification gets greater. And the next thing you know, things like this are happening. And the gospel. I one of the things that that Obama said recently was that to deny the Holocaust was just ignorant. I think was the term that he used, and he used another term, but I couldn't agree more. And the degree of ignorance that it shows to deny that such a world-impacting event took place and is real. I had the pleasure of visiting Germany, a very beautiful country where this horrible, horrible crime took place. And some of the school-age kids, and this has only been about 6 or 7 years ago, and some of the school-age kids were only learning about the Holocaust then. One of the first generations where they actually taught about it in the schools in Germany, from what my German interpreter was telling me. And she said that, and then I understood that for people who wanted to find a doubt for the Holocaust, there was a only one shred of legitimacy for that opinion, and that is because after the Nuremberg trials started, that that people were afraid that if they even knew about that there was a camp there and they did nothing to stop it, that they would be tried also. So in the towns, again from what my German interpreter told me, that in the towns where the concentration camps were, the people in the towns denied that they ever knew there was one there. Because simply acknowledging that it was there could have, they felt, whether it could, would have or not, I don't know, but they felt that it could have put them in jeopardy for even acknowledging that it was there, and they did nothing to stop it. So, but to be at this position in world history and to deny that the Holocaust took place is gross ignorance. And
I've noticed in the last 2 or 3 years just a big increase in kind of a blatant anti-Semitism. And to me, it's shocking. I mean, I guess it's because I have a lot of Jewish friends that I love, you know, and I don't get it. You know, I just can't grasp it. I've seen a rise of it, and certainly in the Islamic world, it's at a fever pitch. And it's just something that we all need to stand up and you know, acknowledge and stand
against. Absolutely. And you know, how do you confirm it? Present your opinion? You know, these people aren't going to listen to an opinion. I still think that the gospel is the only way to really stand up for this, and in a way that it is going to be effective, maybe not that day, maybe not in that person. But, you know, the reason I continue sharing the gospel is because I believe it's our only hope. I really do. In all of these situations, and again, the term all is applicable now because we are referring to the gospel. Everything else is, you know, just people and individuals. And even as I was saying, you know, we'll even, segregate a whole family and say, well, they are all of those, whatever names, they're in the blank, all those Williamses are lazy people, or all of those Williamses are liars. But that's just not true. I know some lazy Williamses, and I might be considered one of them. But I guarantee you, it's not the whole fam family.
Right.
And that terminology, it would be very wise, you know, that if we've got an experience that we had that we want to share, or a bad experience even with a certain person, that's one thing. But man, to take those experiences and broad brush paint everyone of that color, that race, that sexuality, whatever, you know, that they are all that way. That just is a devaluing of one group, and as Glenn was pointing out to us very aptly, that's what opens the door to this event. And I don't want to be supportive of opening the door. And the people who are helping open the door to that are standing back and saying, we're not responsible for what happened.
Right.
But they are standing at the door holding it open. Why not shut the door? At least where that person is concerned. Why validate that type of rhetoric and divisiveness and racism and bigotry? Why support it? You know, we can only try the person who did it, but I tell you what, there's a lot of guilt to go around for what happened today at the Holocaust Museum, and the encouragement and the open door from a lot of very vocal people on the public stage in America today. Regardless of your political opinion, we just cannot allow that type of rhetoric to go on.
Well, Mike, I'm looking out my window, and the Kings Island fireworks have started going off, which means it's 10 o'clock, so we've come to the end of end of our time tonight.
You're kidding!
That was a quick hour, wasn't it?
It really was.
We thank everybody. We thank Mike Kolb and Glenn Klein for calling in tonight. As always, we thank Mike Williams. And I'm Greg Amberge. We thank you for listening to this broadcast of the Glenn Klein Online from the Glenn Klein Online studios in Tampa. Everybody have a blessed week.